evening. I'd like to call the regular meeting of the Oceano Community Services District to order January 23rd, 2019. May we have a roll call, please?
Director Villa?
Here.
Director Gibson?
Here.
President Austin?
Here.
Vice President White?
Here.
Director Raplopo?
Here.
Okay, if you'll all please rise and join me with the, for the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Is there any agenda review? Anyone have anything they want to move or change on the agenda?
I didn't see anything.
Okay. We'll move on to closed session, which we have none. So that'll bring us to public comment for items that are not on the agenda. Public comment provides an opportunity to address the board for 3 minutes in items within the jurisdiction of the district that are not on the agenda. So I have one slip for Lucia Casanueva.
Good evening, everyone. I'm here just to talk briefly about Central Coast Blue. I think I would like to ask you a very simple, important question. Do you want the water treatment plant to be moved to Oceano? Yes or no? And if yes, why? And if not, why not? I would like to see you and hear you discuss it. And I would like to hear a public comment. So I would like you to put it on the agenda and give Oceano an opportunity for feedback, because it's not to be taken for granted that that water treatment plant can be moved to Oceano just default. The Oceano Beach Community Association does not approve of the water of the Pismo plant to be moved on Oceano land. I think it's a fine project for Pismo, but why do they have to do it on our land? Why can't they keep it in their city? That's our wetland, our coast, and eventually it's going to have to be vacated, even from the sanitation plant. So it doesn't make any sense to bring more infrastructure on that land that eventually it could be just a floodplain. During the rain season, we can let it flood. During the non-rainy season, it could be a park. A day-use park, a campground for thousands of people to park there and walk to Pier Avenue, walk to our melodrama, walk to our beautiful Oceano downtown. So please put it on the agenda and have a chance to discuss it. Besides, I heard the Pismo Beach Public Works manager told us that Pismo is considering purchasing land on Front Street to put their filtering equipment. Now, I don't know if that's a rumor or if it's true. I heard about it. Fortunately, I think even Pavo told them that that wasn't a very suitable location. I mean, we think it's outrageous that Pismo wants, if thinking about putting some infrastructure on our downtown, where we want to revitalize, beautify. Sure, if they don't want the facility in their downtown, we don't want it in our downtown either. But it seems to me that Pismo Beach is colonizing Oceano. I mean, the sanitation plant is here. They want to put the treatment water plant here. I mean, are we their backyard? Are we their colony where they get the profit and we all just get the trash? So please make sure that you make a resolution, you talk about it, and do the best for Oceano. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment? Okay. Seeing none, then we will move on to staff special presentations and reports. So we can start with our field supervisor, Tony Maricino.
Good evening, board. Tony Maricino. All right, we had samples, daily rounds. We had 9 work orders. We had 8 USAs, underground service alerts. We had 6 customer service calls. We had 1 after-hours call-out. That was for a turn-on that was locked off after no payment. Meter reads. We had a little delay in meter reads. One of the handhelds went down. It delayed us a little bit with the rain also. We had rereads, highs, lows, leak notifications. Continuing with the trash pickup. Working on meter changeouts that were either stuck or not operating properly after the reads, after the meter reads. First of the month equipment runs. We have the job on 23rd in Paso that started for the infiltrator, and we had the job on 13th right prior to Highway 1 that started this week. And those look very well. The air park bridge, they're still waiting on relocation of those lines that are above head for trailers. They could potentially catch them and rip them down. There's no set time frame. I talked to the county. They're still waiting on the utility owners to relocate those to open up the bridge. And just to let you know, Lopez is currently at 40.6% full, which is 20,061 acre feet. Beginning of this month, we had been delivered 327 acre feet from Lopez, and we've currently pumped to the beginning of this month was 245 acre feet. Any questions?
Anyone have any questions? No.
No.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tony. Okay, Pablo Overin, OCSD General Manager. Do you have a report?
President Austin, members of the board, a few quick updates regarding Five Cities Fire Authority and the efforts on the amendments to the Joint Powers Agreement. Currently, we're anticipating that Five Cities Fire will hold a special meeting on Thursday, February 7th at 10 o'clock a.m. The city managers and I and Chief Lieberman are currently developing the staff report in order to identify what the recommendations are of the managers with regard to the recommended new funding formula for Five Cities Fire Authority. Overall, the goals would be to have each of the governing boards consider and hopefully support that new funding formula, as well as a 2019-20 budget and each agency's contributions prior to April 1st, which is our first deadline to consider the amendments to the JPA. And overall, I think that the recommendations are coming together well. And again, February 7th, which means that the staff report would be out sometime probably the Friday before. But again, Chief Lieberman is going to publish, but the managers and I are working together with him on the staff report. Also on capital projects, we've set mid-May as the delivery date for the new generator, and that then coincides with going out to bid in mid-February, getting bids in and awarded by your board at the in early March, and having the concrete pad poured by mid-April. It requires about 28 days of curing, so that would be ready for delivery in mid-May and then hooked up shortly thereafter. The County Highway 1 drainage project is scheduled to go back out to bid in February. Just had some correspondence with them today, so our bidding process will be parallel to theirs. I don't have timing on the completion of the project. The other two waterline replacement projects that we're doing, the Highway 1 project, where we're proposing to replace the 2-inch galvanized pipeline prior to Caltrans AC overlay. Caltrans has provided our design engineer with feedback on the initial design. They have a little bit more work to do. Regarding the North Swing project, where we currently have a surface leak, we have not gotten feedback from the county on that design yet. Both projects require encroachment permits, and you know, so that's our item in the critical path. And so I need to place a call to the county and find out where they are in their review. Regarding the community garden, that's Ms. Cassiola attended the Habitat for Humanity meeting last Wednesday. That's one of their priorities. We've had some emails with them in order to really encourage that we make sure to get the community garden done this year, this summer. As an informational item as well, Mr. Vega has paid the fees. He's okay with the easement. We've received a draft easement from his engineer, which I need to forward to legal counsel and get that wrapped up. But essentially, Mr. Vega's appeals have all been resolved. And again, he looks forward to working with the district down the road, since his property also faces 19th Street adjacent to where we're looking at a potential community garden. And he recognizes that in exchange for a possible easement from the board, as discussed at your last board meeting, he continues to express support to do work that would then complement a community garden at that location. And then lastly, with respect to the place, we've set up a meeting with Supervisor Compton and the Planning Department to meet with the place and be able to talk with the Planning Department about steps that would be required for them to have the outcomes that they desire. And be glad to answer any questions.
I'm sorry, I missed it. The meeting about the community garden, who was that with?
Habitat for Humanity.
Okay.
So they've been developing...
I thought they didn't receive grant funding that they had applied for. What's the... Do you know the status of that?
Yeah, I'm... Carrie attended their last meeting. Maybe she can...
They didn't go over the grant funding, but they did go over a mission statement and a vision statement, and it was just an opening, and the county was there, we were there, two residents, and they're looking for more residents, so everyone's welcome to come, and they told us to find more people to come, and the next meeting will be February 20th at 6 p.m. at the, I don't actually know the exact name of it, I do know it's across the street from the community center, what, the County Office of Education. Off of Warner.
19th Street? The Office of Education is on 19th, across from...
Yeah. I don't know if it was the county office. I feel like it's south of the community center. It's got
and off of the dead end to Warner?
Yeah.
So that would be the library? Was it a small structure?
No, it's still by the...
oh, I know which one you're talking about. It's on the corner.
Capslow, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that. But I have the email from Habitat Humanity, and I can forward it to all of you.
Thank
that
you.
Would be easier than me trying to
you.
Locate that on a map.
Verbally.
I have a question. At the JPA meeting on February 7th, is that open to the public?
It is open to the public. All board members can attend. We just have to remind you that your board is always invited to attend any public meeting of any of the agencies that's allowable. You just are sort of discouraged from more than two of you sitting together and discussing district business.
Right. And will there be a question-answer period?
Well, certainly there's going to be public comment, so
okay.
Yeah, questions and answers would be appropriate at that time. Although, again, I would encourage your board members not to dialogue in it, because
sure.
A Q&A will lead to a discussion, which could lead to a Brown Act violation.
Right.
So.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, anything else? Sheriff South Station's not here. So do we have any public comment on the staff reports that were just given? Seeing none. We'll go to the Board of Directors and outside committee reports. Start with Director Villa.
Yeah, our social media ad hoc committee met on the 16th, and it was, I thought, a very productive meeting. We spoke about gaining equipment for the hearing impaired and also equipment for translation. We'll be looking into obtaining this through the PEG funding. We're pretty confident we'll receive it. And we also spoke about our dire need of modern equipment here, audio and video. And we will also be looking into getting funding from Charter Communications. And we will be setting up a meeting with Bob so that he can recommend the list of equipment that we need. We projected maybe $28,000 to $30,000 worth of equipment, and hopefully it will all be funded. Also, we discussed policy for our social media, and we'll be looking into getting the appropriate policy for our agency here. And basically, I think that's the gist of it.
I think that's a pretty good coverage of the meeting. We did subsequently then get a cost estimate for equipment for the hearing impaired. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be developing, you know, looking for some other cost estimates as well. Not inexpensive equipment, but in the grand scheme of things, certainly fundable even at the estimates that we receive. So see if there are some alternatives that are less expensive, but we have some good references on the equipment for the hearing impaired.
That's it.
Thank you. Thank you, Director Gibson.
Yes, thank you. I'm going to read my notes off my phone. Forgive me. So I attended the Zone 3 water meeting, and the two main things we discussed were, was the fact that Lopez is still hovering around the 20,000 acre feet point. So if on June 1st it is below 20,000 acre feet, then they will implement the low reservoir
response
plan. I always want to say that wrong. And then the second thing we discussed was cloud seeding. And so the plan for that is that it looks like May 21st, there will be a public hearing at the Board of Supervisors. And then I believe there's a 30-day period for the public to respond. And then it goes back to the supervisors, and then if it is approved, and then they go out for an RFP for a weather modification contractor. And then finally it'll go back in July and August, and if everything is approved on the beginning of November, they will start a five-month program. And the $300,000 for that is in the new Zone 3 budget, proposed budget. That's all I have.
Quick clarification again. Thank you and good coverage on the meeting. So if the reservoir is at or under 20,000 acre feet in storage as of June 1st, then the recommendation will go to the Board of Supervisors for implementation of the low reservoir response plan, but it would still be subject to the board's approval. And then with respect to the Zone 3 budget, we will certainly have that on an upcoming board agenda prior to the March meeting in the March Zone 3 meeting, which will be when the Zone 3 Advisory Committee formally considers the budget. So, Carrie, maybe we can target the February 27th meeting for the Zone 3 budget so that the board can review that.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Director Repogel?
I attended the Zone 1-1A Advisory Committee meeting, and one thing I thought was really interesting was you'll all recall that Surf Rider and the Oceano Beach Community Association got together on Coastal Cleanup Day last year, and it was supported by the OCSD in terms of trash pickup, but we did a cleanup of the AG Creek Channel and removed 800 pounds of trash. Well, the county had to go back in. They hired a contractor to go back in before it started raining because a lot of the homeless folks were encouraged by the sheriff to bring all their trash up and put it on the levee. Their contractor removed 8,000 pounds of trash, which is quite a lot, but I'm really glad that they cleaned that up before it started raining. On the waterway management program, county's accepted $3 million FEMA grant to fund that. On the Meadow Creek Watershed Lagoon Restoration Plan, which would restore 8 acres of lagoon, they've made a grant application for almost $1 million, and they will get a decision on that in April. And upcoming on that, there would be a science panel, including community members, to advise on this project when it gets going. They've removed, in the last storm and the one prior, 12 willow trees got knocked down into AG Creek.
And let's see. Yeah, both the AG and Carpenter Creeks have breached the beach and flowing out into the ocean. And I also attended the Oceano Advisory Council meeting, and I'm the secretary for that, so all my notes are on the computer from memory. But we had someone from the county who presented on the accessory dwelling ordinance updates that the county is considering right now, which would make it easier to do infill for someone to put an accessory unit, a granny unit, they're sometimes called, on their property. And that's under consideration right now. I think they're looking for public input on that. And also right now there's a county meeting for the public to discuss the little houses on wheels,
Tiny homes.
Yes, thank you. Currently it's not legal to live in them in the county, but the county is considering changing that as well. So that's another opportunity for public input. And let's see. Oh, we've also got a really great code enforcement guy for Oceano now who's coming to, he's been to two meetings in a row at the OAC, and he reported on all the actions that he's working on in the area right now. There's some concrete that was dumped on, I think it's 25th and Laura Lane, and they're looking to have that out of there by early February. The recycling center over here that was supposed to put in landscaping along Front Street before they started operating, and they didn't. That's supposed to also be done around the end of the month. What else? The Pier Avenue abandoned house that's been a nightmare for a long time. That has been posted now, and they're gathering evidence from the Sheriff's Department about all the complaints in support of a potential a nuisance abatement action. I think those are all the highlights. That's all I have.
Okay, thank you.
If I might, Director Roplogel, when we get to the PowerPoint ordinance, or I think it's item, I'm not sure if it's 9A or 9C now. Yes, 9A, under rules and regulations, if I don't remember to bring up the accessory dwelling unit ordinance, I don't have it on my PowerPoint just because I didn't get into a detailed list of what we're going to be moving forward on, but I can certainly speak to that a little bit as well. And so if I forget to,
I'll try and remind
me. And then with regard to the science panel from in the community, did anybody indicate how somebody from in the community might apply to be on that science panel?
No, it was just mentioned in passing as something that's going to be upcoming.
Okay.
Once the project gets started. I mean, it's not just going to be community members. It's also going to be scientists and environmentalists. And so I don't have further details on that at this point.
Okay. It's going to be a mandatory part of the study.
Yes. So the background that I had knowledge of was that they were looking at a science panel. So someone like a general manager is generally not going to qualify. But when they're looking for community members who have appropriate qualifications, I think that it would be good for us, at least through the website and our other communication channels, try to get the word out so that individuals with the appropriate qualifications who live in Oceano can make sure to apply and you know, potentially be on that panel.
Good idea.
Yeah.
Dr. White, do you have anything?
Yes. I attended the Five Cities Fire Authority meeting this morning, and most of the business was routine. We have gifted all of our old air packs and old equipment, breathing equipment that was no longer usable for our department has gone to Hancock College. They've taken over the liability and they're going to use it for training, not only with fire but also with police, which I thought was interesting in their police and fire academy. But of concern to us is the fact that Truck 5, that's what you could call the hook and ladder or the big truck we have, on January 15th, it was coming back from a call at Vernon and West Branch. They stopped at a stop sign, and the engine self-destructed. So it will be out of service for at least 4 weeks, and the bill for a new diesel engine is $25,000. And I questioned, because it's a Detroit diesel that runs forever and ever, and they said it's the challenge of cold starting and heading right out the door at a high speed, you know, the actual work it does in carrying all that heavy equipment and that ladder. But the concern for the fire department is that that truck, along with having a big high ladder, also carries almost all of the fire department's equipment, their tools, their all the other ladders. And so without that truck running, they do not have, at this point, a 35-foot ladder that would reach a second story of any of the apartments in our area. However, for quick rescue, they're going to buy about a $1,000 35-foot ladder, and the old Grover Beach LaFrance fire truck that's a reserve in the back of the fire station is long enough to carry 35-foot ladders, and they'll rig a system so they can carry the ladders on the for the next 4 weeks. You know, you kind of do what you have to do. So they're very, very concerned about it, but they're trying to make the quickest temporary fix they can get. But right now, and often people criticize because they don't think that truck does a lot, but you should have seen the pictures of it down at Santa Maria a couple of weeks ago at that massive furniture fire. And a fireman told me, because that fire started at the bottom and went right up to the second story and was burning all the furniture and all the mattresses in the second story of that building, which is one of the most dangerous fires for firefighters to fight, because it's high smoke and stuff that doesn't, you don't put a couch out real quick. And the pictures of Santa Maria's big snorkel up in the air 40 feet and ours with a rainbow in the middle from where the water was hitting and the sun reflecting. It shows you, you know, these tools are very, very important to our communities. Anyway, end of commercial.
All right, thanks a lot, Candace. Okay, so I attended the Board of Supervisors meeting last Tuesday, and the report that we had at our January 9th meeting on the fire study was on their agenda. So they were evaluating all the fire protection services in all the special districts in the county and the unincorporated county. So they have us in their study. They have it down that we intend to remain with the Five Cities Fire Authority. But if there's any withdrawal of any of the other members of the JPA, then that could cause Oceano to seek other options. So the counties put in the report that if Oceana has to divest and go back with the county, we would have to they would have to acquire more staffing. So the additional cost would be $600,000 in addition to the $900,000 that is already collected from property tax here. So I had comments. I had to leave before the public comment, but Fire Chief Lieberman read my comments and mainly we just expressed our appreciation for the county for all the work they've been doing, and that we're working very hard on our future with the Five Cities Fire Authority, but that we do recognize that we want to keep in close collaboration with the county, and because it's we recognize the importance and are willing to participate in any of the discussions. So San Luis County policy regarding all of these special districts will remain consistent. So that was it on the county report. Is there any public comments on the special board of directors reports? Okay, seeing none, then we will go to our consent agenda.
President Austin?
Yes.
I'm not sure if this is the appropriate point, but I would like to pull both minutes, items 8A and B.
Okay. Then we'll pull those off the consent agenda and do those separately. And anything else? Okay, then let's see. Then we'll do item C, D, and E. We can go ahead and do those, and then come back to these. Is that what you want?
Certainly, but public comment on all consent agendas.
So I will do public comment on C, D, and E. Okay, so is there any public comment on items C, D, and E on the consent agenda? Okay, seeing none, then I'll take a motion to review or to accept the consent items C, D, and E on the consent agenda.
I shall move.
Have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, so carried. 5-0. Okay, so.
President White, if we could get a clarification on who seconded the motion.
Well, Shirley was first, I think, and then Aileen, too, so I think you can.
We were same time, I think, but.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay, Director Gibson then seconded the motion.
Okay, so item 8A. The regular.
Actually, I'm sorry. We need to. We actually need to take that motion by a roll call because item D is a resolution.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, so we will take a roll call vote on items 8, C, D, and E.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Opogle?
Yes.
Vice President White?
Yes.
President Austin?
Yes. Okay. So we'll move to item 8A. And I guess, Director Opogle, you want to bring up?
Yes, I just wanted to make a comment on the December 12th agenda, item 8A, on 3D, the election of district officers. It states a motion was made to elect Director Austin for president with a motion from Director Gibson, a second from Director White, and a 5-0 vote. First, I would like to apologize to the board and the community that I actually did not cast a vote. The whole thing was moving a little quickly for me, and the yes vote went through, and then I was thinking about, do I want to vote yes or do I want to vote no, and it was all over before I actually voted. And in retrospect, I ought to have spoken up and said, excuse me, I need a minute to think about this or something, but I didn't do that, and I apologize. It's not going to happen again. It was brought to my attention that the bylaws state that a not voting is equivalent is to be taken as an affirmative vote. So I don't know if it's actually accurate to say it's a 5-0 roll call. I'm sorry, a 5-0 vote because I didn't vote, but I just wanted to mention that.
Today's minutes can certainly reflect the comments. The other provision in the bylaws that we double-checked on the tape, and it's really kind of important, is that the president does need to confirm what the results of the vote were, and we did verify that the president confirmed a 5-0 vote. So as all your members should really know, and Director Opogle is graciously bringing it to attention through an apology, is that if you are uncertain at the time of a vote is being cast, then when the president announces the results of a vote, that does give you an opportunity to say, wait, and have then discuss it at that point in time, and if appropriate, have a revote in order to clarify where board members stand. And also in the conduct of the meeting, to have that pause to make sure everybody's ready to vote is a good idea too. We've had a recent one where even if it's just a discussion item, the idea of making sure that we've gotten all final comments from board members and any possible motions and stuff. So, again, in terms of the bylaws, I think that what happened in the prior meeting still needs to stand, but in this meeting's minutes, we can certainly reflect Director Rapplovo's comments regarding those prior actions.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to change the outcome. Wanted to clarify
bring it to attention.
What happened.
I think that's helpful for all of us to remember, especially when motions are made, we need to slow down a little bit at that point in time.
I think the other problem is if people aren't close to their microphone, I don't necessarily hear what is said at that end. So I think that's a problem, too, hearing.
Yeah, and in the correspondence that I had with Director Oplogo, my observations are consistent with what her statements are now.
Thank you.
Okay, so do we...
And then... we can do... Did you want to also address the subsequent meeting minutes?
Yeah.
Okay, so...
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Do the meeting
minutes. Yeah, the January 9th meeting, item 9B, which was consideration of an update on projects and programs of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District with direction to board-appointed board members and staff. Under action, it says, after an opportunity for public comment and brief board discussion, presentation was given by Jeremy Gent, no action taken. I think those are a little bit out of order because his presentation was first, and then there was public comment, and the board discussion wasn't brief. So I think I would like to recommend that we revise that. Also, I don't know if it's appropriate at this point, but I would like to suggest that we bring this item back for discussion at a future meeting, because as the alternate board member on the sanitation district, I don't feel like I got direction out of that discussion. And the recommendation from staff was provide direction to board members who are appointed to the sanitation district board of directors and district staff as deemed appropriate.
So clarification quickly. We can certainly not act on these minutes tonight. My suggestion will be when we have questions like this, if staff is contacted prior to the meeting, then we would have the ability to potentially modify what's in the staff report and then hopefully take action that night. But I think we can easily work on the January 9th minutes and resubmit them at the next meeting. And then the clarification is on that agenda item specifically, were you asking to have the direction regarding the sanitation district back on the agenda at a future time?
Yes.
Okay. So we can address that through future agenda items, and it certainly can also be discussed with regard to the public outreach agenda item today.
I apologize that I didn't have a chance to contact staff.
Oh, yeah, that's okay. It's just my kind of always make that reminder. So the recommendation at this time from your general manager would be to only act on item 8A, which is the December 12th meeting, take no action on 8B, and then we can work on that and resubmit that at the next meeting.
Okay, would someone like to make a motion?
I make a motion. We approve 8A.
Bring 9B back. You can do them both
and,
at the same
time. Well, I guess we can bring 9B back, yeah.
Certainly, we also want to take public comments on 8A and 8B since those were not part of the original.
Okay, I'd open the public comment now for items 8A and B, the minutes that we just discussed. Is any public comment? Okay. Seeing none, then I'll entertain a motion again.
I move we approve item 8A and we bring back for future consideration item 8B.
Second. Okay, moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? None. Carries 5-0. Okay.
And if I might, I'd say that was all well done.
All right. Up to item 9, business items. We'll put public comment on each one separate after?
Yeah. Yes.
So we'll do 9A is the introduction of discussion on amending the district's rules and regulations with board direction as deemed appropriate.
And thank you, Tony. As Tony hit the lights, and as an introduction to amending the rules and regulations, I guess the before jumping into the PowerPoint presentation, the overriding statement that I want to make is that this is a work effort that's has been a goal for the board and the district for the last couple years. And as we've been working through our various priorities, 2019 is the year that the rules and regulations will be fully addressed. But it is going to take, much of 2019 to get through the entire process and all of the related issues. There's three components to addressing rules and regulations. One is technical review. The second is our Seabreeze Mobile Home Park, because certain events that came up in 2017 highlight issues that need to be addressed. And then the third is the codification. With respect to technical review, we have approximately 45 ordinances that have been adopted by the board since 1984, a couple hundred resolutions, although many of those resolutions don't affect rules and regulations. Resolutions are often, have been in the past, adopted for things like authorize the application for a grant or whatever, versus the resolution that authorizes the general manager to execute reimbursement agreements with new development. That would be incorporated into the rules and regulations. But conformance with legal requirements. And so out of all these 45 ordinances, which of them still continue to be in effect, and how well do they conform to existing legal requirements? We have new legislation that we have to address. For example, in 2020, law that was passed last year is going to establish new requirements prior to turning off water service. And so we have to address those in 2019, make sure that they're adopted in district ordinance so that we're ready to implement the new law in 2020 when it goes into effect. The one that I am remembering to bring up that I asked Director Rapogel to remind me in case I didn't is with respect to accessory dwelling units. In prior years, I've read the accessory dwelling unit legislation, and it was permissive in terms of a special district's ability to charge capacity fees or connection fees for accessory dwelling units. We need to catch up with the law, see if there's any changes in 2019. My understanding right now is it's still permissive. But at the same time, the county has been modifying their fee structure in order to reduce the impacts of fees, especially on smaller units. And they've moved to a fee that's square footage based in some situations up to a certain amount. And then if a structure is over a certain square footage, then it's equivalent to a single family dwelling unit. I think that's going to be pertinent for your board to consider. We had the Vega appeal last year where, you know, the add-on was significant, 1,200 plus square feet, comparable to a single family residential unit. We have another one in front of us that, again, has cooking facilities, but it's about 600 square feet. And so there's really a significant difference in size of those two different structures, and yet under existing district ordinance, they pay the same capacity fees and the same new development fees because they both have cooking facilities associated with it. It may be well that under the current legislation that affects accessory dwelling units, the district is allowed to continue with the existing fee, but then the policy is, do you want to move to something that's more square footage based in order to provide the smaller accessory dwelling units and the granny units with some sort of a lesser fee? We know school fees are based on square footage, so it's not a new model, but walking through new legislation like associated with accessory dwelling units, where is it that it says may or shall or must, and then to the extent that your board has discretion, where do you want to, what discretion do you want to use in the future on accessory dwelling units? And so that's another example of making sure that we review our existing rules and regulations and ordinances in terms of conformance with legal requirements and what type of discretion does your board have. Another bullet I put up there is which prior ordinances and resolutions are still valid. The one that's attached is Ordinance 2006-1. I attached it just to sort of wet your whistle a little bit on the kind of exciting details we're going to be looking at. We're not going to really review that ordinance in its detail today, but it is the primary ordinance that we look to when we are talking with new development and we look to our rules and regulations, perhaps even other enforcement issues associated with backflow preventers on our water system. But the point here is that Ordinance 2006-1 superseded some of the prior ordinances, some of the prior ordinances that dated back to the 1990s and the 1980s. But which ones did they supersede, and to what extent are some of those older ordinances still in effect? And so that's somewhat of a rigorous type of a process that we have to go through in evaluating those ordinances, resolutions, and determining which ones are still valid. And then even then, since 2006-1 was adopted, we know that some of our newer ordinances and resolutions have superseded 2006-1, most notably rates and charges that we impose on new development have been superseded. And all of a sudden, almost got lost there for a second. So there's a fair amount of technical review, and that, of course, is, I'm always reliant on legal counsel to help review it from a technical perspective. Moving to Seabreeze, this is a really important issue in the services that are provided to Seabreeze in the context of updating the rules and regulations, because we know that there's a historical services that we've provided to Seabreeze Mobile Home Park, which, you know, other than we haven't done any major line replacements associated with the lines within their property, we've done repairs, we read the individual meters, and we've provided certain historical services, which in 2017 changed and have had discussions. And I think the point of emphasis right now to Seabreeze is that we can provide those type of services in the future. And the issue really comes down to equity. And it's not just a policy issue, but it's also a Proposition 218 issue. So some of the things that what's important that we've done so far is we've done some comparisons to the other mobile home parks. Seabreeze is the mobile home park that has had a full range of services in the past. The other mobile home parks have had essentially no services in the past. And what this really boils down to is Proposition 218 requirements. We're under Section 6.3. The amount of a fee or charge imposed upon any parcel or persons as an incident of property ownership, and that's the basis for establishing our water system rates, shall not exceed the proportional cost of service attributable to the parcel. So let's go to the next slide. A little bit hard to read, and this is also one that was provided out of our mobile home parks that we have. And this is 2017 data. It's not 2018 data. But the cost of Seabreeze is the third lowest, and yet the services that they're provided are the highest. And so that runs into a challenge on Proposition 218 in terms of having to meet the test of proportionality, where the costs that we charge are supposed to be in proportion to the services provided. And this is a really important point of emphasis, because the services that we've historically provided by Seabreeze, there's no legal restriction from being able to provide those services in the future. The question is, what's the appropriate compliance with Prop 218? And when I look at historical services being very high and yet the revenues being relatively low, that's the first thing that jumps to my mind in terms of the existing rate structure and the services are arguably not in compliance with Prop 218. However, it's not just about the mobile home parks either. How much do mobile home parks pay in proportion to single-family residential units? And the sanitation district is a good example, where when Barrow Wells went through some of the more recent analysis for the sanitation district, they actually reduced charges to mobile home parks because the average mobile home park has less wastewater flows than the average single-family dwelling unit does. So it's a sort of a two-part test in a way, again reinforcing the idea that the district can provide all those historical services to Seabreeze, but the two tests are how do the services and the costs, or how much Seabreeze pays, How are those match up against other mobile home parks? And then how much do mobile home parks overall pay in comparison to other customers within the community? And the next steps associated with Seabreeze themselves is sitting down and really defining what types of services that are provided. And then how do we incorporate that into next steps associated with the overall rules and regulations? So I'll get to that, back to that in a minute. The third component, when I talk about next steps, the third component with respect to codification is the work effort associated with taking all of the ordinances, the 45, and the resolutions that apply to rules and regulations and bringing them into a single district code. And the idea is many districts have their own codes, counties and cities most notably have county codes and city codes or municipal codes. But a single well-organized document, the district code, is intended to, the benefits are is it's more user-friendly. That if, and on the website, so that if individuals, especially if we're talking about engineers, surveyors, and people who represent new development, can go to one document and they can see what the rules are for Oceano with respect to, you know, building a new house or an accessory dwelling unit or whatever particular. A combined document also facilitates legal review, because one of the inefficiencies that we face right now is having to go back and say, okay, on a particular issue, what is the ordinance that really applies? We have a draft codification from several years back that never got adopted. That's a resource document. We know that 2006-1 is the primary ordinance on water systems, and so it requires really a lot of studying, which I did, you know, soon after being hired by the district. But that knowledge is then in me, and it's not institutional knowledge with the district. And so having a codification, as whether it's me or whomever, you know, might lead the staff, always is going to have turnover. And so a well-organized code is also going to facilitate, you know, staff's review with legal counsel on what is in the, and it facilitates amendments. So by having one district code and we know that things are going to have to change, whether it's a result of legal review or new legislation, or whether it might be the result of the board's desire to change an approach in doing something like fees associated with accessory dwelling units, perhaps. When we go through to do those amendments, then it facilitates the amendment process by having a code. Now, in terms of the options to create the code, we were envisioning at first that legal counsel and I would be going through quite an extensive effort. And before doing that, though, I was able to look at a code of another community services district within the county, which was originally created by one of the big publishing houses. It's like, I think it's called LexisNexis or whatever. I got the name and contact information. Lexis they publish a lot of different legal codes, water codes, and government codes. Overall, they work on codes, municipal codes for 4,100 different municipalities in all 50 states. And this is a quick handout, not to dwell in any detail right now, but Nicole and I sat in on a demonstration with MuniCode on how some of their self-publishing software works, and we're going to obtain a proposal under two different options. One is where they do more work and we do less work, and that's more expensive, and then the other option is we do less work and they do more work, and that's the more expensive option. And so they have a couple of different products, but overall I really like the approach that they're taking, because once the municipal code is created, when we're looking at amendments, legal counsel and I can go in and we can actually use their software tool to modify the municipal, our code, as you know, we think it should be, you know, in terms of our proposed recommendations to your board. The software will then create the ordinances or resolutions for us so that if they're adopted, then it automatically updates our code. And I think that utilizing a publishing software like this is really going to be beneficial, again, when we have turnover in staff, as a small agency, having a nice, efficient product. That's only possible now because of, you know, the advances in terms of IT technology and everything. And the preliminary numbers that we were talking about, it does not sound like it's very expensive at all. So, again, we're going to get a proposal for them from them in order to look at these codification options. I'll also mention that the more expensive option, which in the grand scheme of things, we haven't seen numbers, may not be that much more expensive. It provides automatic translation into numerous different languages. The less expensive option, somebody would be able to use Google to do translations, but sometimes that's a little bit hit and miss, and sometimes it's not as easy to figure out how to do. So there are some trade-offs in the two different options that are available. And again, the nicer option is something that he clicked and showed us. You know, I don't know, Nicole, it looked like there was every language on the earth that could be translated. That's mm-hmm. not true, but it was, you know, at least all the languages that we commonly would think that someone might use. So that's the options for the codification. And again, MuniCode, well-recognized, one of the industry leaders in codification for municipalities with over 4,100 clients throughout the nation. I'm really eagerly looking at what their proposal will be. So next steps. With the codification, it's tamed proposals and review with legal counsel. And there's a possibility it's within my purchasing authority, but maybe not. So I may likely need to come back to the board for approval. With respect to Seabreeze, is to meet with them, develop a common understanding of the types of services that we're working on, because ultimately, as we talk in about some of the efforts that we're going to be doing under the public outreach, the district is going to be looking at a Prop 218 in order to fund deferred infrastructure. And it's during that Prop 218 process that by making sure we are on the same page with Seabreeze in terms of the types of services and what the options are, that the cost implications could be then evaluated by the Prop 218 rate consultant. And so it's do our homework with Seabreeze now, and then as we're working on the other issues, and we're going to need to bring in a Prop 218 consultant later in the year, then be able to talk with the Prop 218 consultant, say these are the issues associated with our overall customer base, mobile home parks in general, Seabreeze specifically, what types of service options are appropriate, and then what is their evaluation of what the cost of those different service options should be. And finally, with the legal review, I think that we go through the codification process first so that we have one document that reflects what is valid in terms of all the ordinances and resolutions that have been adopted by your board, and then legal counsel and I will evaluate the code in terms of other legislation and the need for legal updates, and then also, as mentioned, dovetail it with Proposition 218 efforts later in the year. I believe that is the final slide. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
I have one. When you put it into one code, is there redundancies that you can eliminate, or even in just wording, just introductions and stuff, or do you really gain anything at all on that?
Well, I don't know what your thoughts are, Jeff. I tend to think that we're not going to see a lot of redundancies, because when we adopt an ordinance and it supersedes prior ordinances, then it eliminates those redundancies. What I think we might see is potentially ambiguities where we adopted a new ordinance and that it conflicts with some other ordinance that when the ordinance was adopted, you know, people go, oh, we didn't remember that old ordinance. So I think there's a better chance that we're going to see ambiguities, or it's a better chance that we're going to see gaps, where when it's all consolidated into a code, we look at it and we say, no one's ever addressed this particular issue in the past. And I certainly think we know we have opportunities there because our current rules associated with new development fees address single-family residential or residential development. They address non-residential development, but they don't address mixed-use development. So when we have had mixed-use development in the past, they've had to come specifically to your board in order to interpret, you know, the existing ordinance as best as your board could. That's an example of a will serve letter that district staff can't issue without coming to your board for interpretation of the existing. So I think it's more likely we might find ambiguities and gaps in our code, less likely that we'll see, you know, redundant type of language.
Thank you. And I think having a unified code is a great idea. It would be much more user-friendly. I mean, what we've got now, the non-searchable PDFs online, it's...
Yes.
I've gone poking around looking for something, and it's quite difficult not having, you know, the institutional knowledge that you do to...
Yeah, and I even cringe a little bit because you think you know it pretty well, and then you wonder, okay, what am I missing? So... The other thing that you might note in the handout is they also do similar efforts for policies and procedures. And the discussion today was that we're following the CSDA manual in terms of the structure for our policies and procedures, but it looks like we could use that structure, or what they call the tree, take the CSDA tree and incorporate it into their software. But I think first steps is let's work with their software on the codification, and it might also be applicable to a really good set of internal district policies.
I have a question. Somewhere in here I read about that Seabreeze had individual units had a meter.
Correct.
And then some of the other mobile home parks only had the 1 meter.
Correct.
Okay. So why is that, and then is that a problem
so
when we're trying to be consistent? And
on the surface, it's not a problem. That with the mobile home parks that have a single meter, then they're billed, and then those parks go ahead and take that bill and figure out how much each of the units needs to pay. With respect to Seabreeze, we do the metering and everybody pays, you know, their own meter charge. Those two options are viable. The question really comes to then, what's the services that we're providing to the mobile home park, and are the revenues that we're collecting from the mobile home park equitable in comparison to other mobile home parks, mm-hmm. and are they equitable with respect to, you know, other district customers? So... single meters versus multiple meters aren't inherently right or wrong. It still comes down to the Prop 218 test. Are the services we're providing and the cost or the money we're collecting, are they meeting the proportionality rule?
How long has this situation existed with Seabreeze?
Oh, I think it dates back just prior to the district's formation in 1984.
So quite a long time.
Yes.
And it's only recently... come up as an issue?
Yeah, it's my fault.
Because I can see if I had been living there for a long time and all of a sudden you're like, well, we think you should pay more money for your service.
Certainly.
And
so... which is one of the reasons why we all said, okay, we're going to sort of take a time out, go slow, and make sure to fully evaluate the situation. The part of the issue associated with Seabreeze was that when it was first created, the system was still under the county of San Luis Obispo. Mm-hmm. And staff at the county just simply decided to do certain things without Board of Supervisors' approval. And those past practices were essentially inherited by the district. When... I started looking into it, just like, you know, there was sort of numerous things that we had to clean up with the district, including the accounting for the sheriff's building and prior period accounting adjustments that were worth, you know, $500,000 or something. And we had a lot of cleanup to do on the accounting side. But the point is that when I started gaining a better understanding with what we were, the services we were providing to Seabreeze, and I started looking back into, well, do we have an agreement with Seabreeze? No. What was the board action on, was the Seabreeze pipes within the Seabreeze property, were those accepted into the district system? Were there any easements established? So all of that stuff that should have happened in the 1980s just simply didn't happen. And so it draws into a concern is what's the district's authority for doing something, because with respect to a governmental entity, as a general manager, one of the things that I have to be really cognizant about is that if staff starts doing certain things, and establishes prior practices and starts creating commitments for the district that were not approved by the governing board, that's a problem. And it can
sounds like that was happening for many years.
Yes. And I look back at the record, and you know, I believe that at least one GM brought it up in the past and then sort of decided to, I don't know, just not worry about it anymore. So I needed to bring it to the table. It, you know, it's a challenge to bring those types of issues to the table. And so now it's really in the context of the overall rules and regulations that is the best way to approach it, because it, the bottom line is the district can still continue to provide the services that were provided historically. We simply need to make sure that we meet Prop 218 rules in terms of proportionality. And I can't draw any conclusions, because if you just look at the comparison of what Seabreeze pays versus other mobile home parks, you would jump to the conclusion that, oh, Seabreeze needs to pay more. But when we look at the sanitation district example, where they reduce the rates for all the mobile home parks, then it draws in the second question is, are mobile home parks paying the right prices in comparison to others within the district? So it's a sort of a two-part equation. It's complicated. It's not going to be easily answered. But the good thing is ultimately your board's going to have a lot of discretion on it. And so moving forward, we want to make sure that we work with Seabreeze in identifying what are the services, what are the questions, so that when we have a Prop 218 consultant come in, because we know we need to do that for other reasons, that these issues are also put on the table. So that 218 consultant can help guide us on what's the appropriate recommendations.
Okay, so the biggest issue then is like the infrastructure in the parks, because the other mobile home parks maintain their own.
Correct.
Right, they have the responsibility, just like residential units, like what you say here, and other district customers are responsible for maintaining pipes and appurtenances with the bounds of private property. But the past practices for Seabreeze have included repairing piping that does not conform to district standards and repairs to streets, although they are not within the county-maintained public road. So is this one of the big items that will be on our discussions? That's what the...
Yes, and it's...
What the problem is.
This is a good example where, you know, the total revenues that the district collects from mobile home parks is not, you know, a big factor. Right, and they're not small factors, but and then it becomes an issue of equity, right? And so certainly making sure that the concerns of Seabreeze and their equity issues are appropriately addressed is really important. As individual connections, there's a certain view that, well, we're an individual connection just like anybody else who lives on a county street. So we should have the same level of service as everybody else on the county streets. And there's a validity to that argument. And then the difference or the disparity on how other mobile home parks are treated, the class of customers that Seabreeze is in, is also a valid concern. So sometimes we get into situations where two different perspectives both have validity associated with them. Right. and we have to sort through it, and we have to make sure that any of the findings ultimately that your board makes regarding the level of service and the cost are supported by law, that you're working within the discretion that you have, and that the findings are appropriately documented in moving forward.
So, like, if their streets are private streets?
Correct.
So we do repair on those private streets, and there's an issue comes up, like someone gets hurt, are we then we're liable because we are doing the repairs there? Or?
Well, I wouldn't jump to any conclusions like that. Risks and liabilities are always a concern.
It's like if you do, if no, but I'm just trying to figure, you know, like if a county road, the county's a county road, right? And but if we do work on a private road, and something happens, because I'm just curious if that's, if we have any.
Sure.
If it causes a pothole that somebody twists their ankle, you know.
Right. President Austin and directors of the board, the issue of liability on the, it's still their private property. So to the extent we have easement, we're doing work within there, we would be doing work within easements to maintain those pipes and the infrastructure that's there. Now, to the extent our crews do anything that would be negligent in some way, yes, we could face liability just like you would on a private property or even within the county right away. So liability doesn't transfer that easily, but okay. Still ultimately, yeah.
And then the issue of easements is really important because when the park was created, there was offers of dedication, but governmental entities have to formally accept those offers of dedication. And so when the county has a county-maintained road, they take formal action that they're going to maintain that road, and then we have to conform to their standards in terms of doing road repairs. Part of the history with Seabreeze is that, yes, we did see offers of dedication, but we didn't see where any of the governmental agencies actually accepted those for maintenance purposes. So there's certainly cleanup work that needs to be done, but before we can do any cleanup work, we have to identify the services, and we have to make sure that we meet Prop 218 requirements. And since this overall effort associated with rules and regulations is going to take us, you know, the better part of the year, we want to make sure that we start it right up front and have Seabreeze on the agenda, and then we will be meeting with them to, you know, again, slowly walk through the issues before any recommendations are made by staff or before your board makes any decisions.
Okay. So the goal is to have all the mobile home parks being conformed to every or
well, and the idea is you are able to provide different service levels to different mobile home parks. So that is an option.
Okay, good. All right, thank you. Anybody else have any questions?
I had one little comment. In the middle of this document that we aren't really looking at tonight,
yes.
I started laughing very strongly, realizing how out of date things are, because on page 14, which is page 45 of the total package of the agenda, item 10, I will read, multiple unit connections for service to planned unit developments such as condominiums, apartments, or trailer courts. How much things have changed.
And a trailer court
is now a mobile home park.
Okay.
But I mean, in when they were,
and maybe the trailer courts were smaller.
Smaller, and it was 30 years ago.
Yeah,
they were
like
at least small little camping areas we had.
But trailers were smaller.
Yeah.
But trailer courts have morphed into mobile home parks.
Were trailer courts the predecessor to mini houses on wheels?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe we're making one big circle and coming back around.
Yeah.
Okay, is there any more comment here before I open to public comment?
No.
Okay, I'll open this up to public comment now if anyone wants to speak on this subject that we just discussed. Come on forward.
Hi, my name is Lisa Cooper, and I am an owner at Sienega Seabreeze. Sienega Seabreeze Park. We are 55-plus senior-owned resident community. We are not a mobile home park. Are you aware of the difference between a mobile home park where you live in a mobile home that's on a large piece of land that is managed by one manager, you lease the land, and then you pay your fees to that management
right.
company? This is not what we are. For clarity's sake, we own a share. There are 70 homeowners. We own, each one of us own a share of the park, and we collectively own our beautiful park within our community, our clubhouse, our swimming pool, our hot tub, and we collectively, cooperatively maintain our community. There are 70 homes in our community. Approximately only 40 are lived in year-round. Some our folks are older and they may be living with other family members. Other folks are moving into the community. They may have a second home, so forth. But the reality is there's only one or two seniors per home. And I wanted to clarify for you that this, I felt, was very disingenuous by lumping us in with mobile home parks, because this was clarified back in 17 that this was not who we were. We are a separately owned situation where each one of us, I pay my own bills. I pay my own utility bills, cable bills. I pay my own water bills, sewage bills. All of that is paid individually by me. I also pay what's called a park fee for the helping of maintaining our collective area. Now, it is true that we maintain our streets. That's, to me, something that should be a benefit to you guys. We maintain our own streets. We take care of everything. I would love to invite any one of you for a tour. We take care of our homes immaculately. We take great pride in our homes. And we pay our bills on time. And we are wonderful consumers for this community. And we want to be treated as such that we are a separate community from what is we're being lumped in as mobile home trailer parks, because we are not. So I kind of take umbrage with that, and I hope that you understand that we are somebody who wants to be a part of this community. We have had community events where we have honored first responders, like when they have the big rain problems and so forth. We want you guys to always be welcome to come to any of our potlucks. We are a very, very tight community of senior folks that really love Oceano and want to remain here. We want to be recognized, though, for what we are. We are a separate kind of circumstance, I'm sure that creates problems. But I think that the thing that's so wonderful about that is it allows us to take full ownership. We aren't just renters in this community. We're owners in this community. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
May I ask her a question? Can I ask a question? What type of community do you call this?
We are a home-based community where each home is individual.
Yeah, I wondered if there was like a term for it.
Share park.
Share park.
We each own a share of the park.
Okay. Do you know of any other communities like that
yes,
in the area?
Yes, there's one in Sunrise Terrace, right? Yeah, Sunrise Terrace in Aurora Grande. I think there's another one in Aurora Grande. I don't know the name of it. I know for sure because when I was purchasing, I wanted to live in this kind of community. I didn't want to live in a kind of community as a retired social worker, as somebody who was going to have to worry in 10 years that my landlord was going to up my rent so that I would not be able to live in a community, because now my rent's gone from, and it's averaging $1,000 a month in like places like LaSage, to we pay $200 a month. So you can see that the value of what I have is as part of my equity in my home. We just sold a home for $350,000 in our community. So you can't really call us a mobile. Even though we're manufactured homes, they're beautiful homes that are that look at for all intents and purposes as singular homes, and they have singular hookups.
Okay.
And
thank
the
you.
Great part is that we can all have ownership.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else who wants to speak?
We're just going to ask a question, but isn't that?
I'm sorry.
We can all use more water. But we've been in a drought, and so, you know, I try to be really, really careful with my water and all of that. I mean, we can use more and spend more, but...
Gary and I both have rain barrels, by the way.
Thank you. My question was, isn't that the location of the voting where we vote? Is your park? Your club? No, okay. Thank you. That was all I was curious about.
Okay. All right, then, seeing no more public comment or any comments here, we'll move on to our next
item. President, yes. Again, an opportunity if any other board members might have some final comments.
I just said, did anybody have any comments? Did anybody? No.
I do. No. So, understanding that words can be meaningful to people in different contexts, you know, it's part of the reason why it's going to be important for us to sit down and work slowly with Seabreeze. But in a contrast, you know, the same is true for apartments versus condominiums. Apartments are rented, condominiums are owned. But from the district's perspective, the services that we provide to apartments versus the services that we provide to condominiums are comparable. And so we really have to look at, you know, the underlying nature of ownership and recognizing that the individuals in Cienega Seabreeze do not see themselves as being part of a mobile home park is somewhat analogous to individuals who own condominiums don't live in apartments. And so that's important to them. It's important for us to recognize. And then when we come back and we look at the services that we're providing to condominiums and the services that we provide to apartments, they are still very analogous and they fit into similar customer classifications. So with respect to you know, understanding that the owners of Cienega Seabreeze recognize that the type of properties that they own and live in are different from the other mobile home parks is similar to people who live in condominiums don't live in apartments. And so with that, I have no further comments.
I have one more comment, just that when we do start this discussion, I'm curious to find out how an accessory unit is defined.
Yes, we don't have accessory dwelling units defined in our ordinances, and whether or not we will be looking with the county's land use definitions and trying to develop consistencies or not is something that we'll have to look at with legal counsel, and part of that's going to be based on what the state laws say.
Okay. Then we will move on to item 9B, review of the district's budget status as of December 31st.
President Austin, members of the board, we have your second quarter budget review for you, and it's very similar to quarter one, so I was going to keep it very brief and just call out the front-loaded costs, which most of them are found in the general fund, these being the CalPERS UAL payment, the lump sum we send to CalPERS every year, our liability insurance, our annual software maintenance. The fixed asset was our phone system we just recently purchased. That was approved by a budget adjustment on September 26th that we were going to use our election expenditures for. The LAFCO payment to the Local Agency Formation Commission, the boot allowance for our utility staff, and memberships. So the water fund also has a few front-loaded costs. They are our water supply for Lopez and State, which was addressed in the budget adjustment made in December. So if you just flip page by page, you can see we are right at 50% and all revenues and expenditures are tracking. But if any board members have any line items they would like to point out or talk about, I'd be happy to discuss those. And if not, I have a couple handouts which were provided. I'll stop to make sure there's no line items. And you can always bring them up later to me. But the county had provided the handouts that I just, they're all pinned together.
Is this here?
Yeah. So they gave us the first preliminary revenue estimates for 18-19. And on the second page, we're highlighted. It has everybody on there. And you can see we're right on track. We're like $5,000 within what we predicted, which is good news. And then the second handout, this is from the county, and it's our unitary tax from PG&E. So this is the portion that is at risk since PG&E intends to file for bankruptcy. But they are still obligated to pay these amounts, but it may be delayed since the unitary tax isn't teetered like the rest of the county property taxes.
Sorry, what's a unitary tax?
So we get that based off of what PG&E, I know Pavel can probably very much go into depth about this, but it's not in the teetered scale where we're guaranteed all these property taxes regardless if someone pays it or not. The county gives us what we're owed, but with it not being teetered.
So two concepts. The unitary tax is basically the tax on energy and other companies that are not based on Proposition 13. So PG&E's property taxes are based on whatever the value is of the nuclear power plant. And so when it was originally went online and it had, you know, decades of useful life ahead of it, it had a higher value. And as it time went by and its future energy production is going to be diminishing, then its value starts to decrease. When PG&E would put in new turbines or new equipment in order to extend the useful life, then that would help to add value back to the particular facilities. So the unitary tax, again, is for essentially everything that doesn't fall under Proposition 13, and it's based on estimates of fair market value. The other thing, and so what Carrie had mentioned was that the teeter plan. So the teeter plan applies to Proposition 13-based assessments, and that is where the county guarantees the revenue to all of the local agencies. If an individual doesn't pay their property taxes and therefore they're subject to penalties, I think it's a minimum 10% if you don't pay it on the right day, plus you can be subject to interest charges, well, the county then collects and keeps the penalties and the interest charges because they've guaranteed all of us the money that we have coming to us. And so that teeter plan, the guarantees that the county provides, do not apply to the unitary tax. So if PG&E is late in making their property tax payments because of the bankruptcy filing, then we may be late in getting that money. The other thing that I think is noteworthy here is that the second installment of about $6,800 means that the total property taxes that we collect from PG&E on an annual basis is, you know, $13,000, say. It's between $10,000 and $15,000. Our total property taxes, Carrie, are...
It was $1,015,000.
Yeah. It means that as a lot of other agencies are concerned about the loss of property taxes with the closure of Diablo, but San Luis Coastal could be losing literally millions of dollars, and the county could be literally losing millions of dollars of property tax revenues a year. Ours is, you know, between $10,000 and $15,000, which I think is like, what, maybe 1% of our total property taxes. We're not going to really feel it at all.
Yeah, thank you.
And then the third handout?
The last handout is the water revenues that we provide for every quarter update. This is a supplemental revenue spreadsheet that includes all the billing cycles, and it has them all broken out for the past 4 years. We've been tracking target revenues versus actual revenues, and the spreadsheet shows the seasonal pattern, so you'll see in the summer months it's a lot higher. Since Ordinance 2015-1 was passed, the shortfall for water revenues is at a total of $240,000 versus our budget. And so this current year we are tracking to be right at, like last year's, at about $20,000. So that's for the past 4 years. And if there's any other questions or line items, I'd be happy to answer.
To just sort of reemphasize that, since Ordinance 2015 went into effect, the April 2015 rate increase, and the target in 2015 was simply to stabilize the budget, stabilize district revenues. The cumulative revenues have been about $250,000 shorter than projected. Good news, bad news. The good news is the community did a really good job at conserving water during the drought, And we can see that most of those revenue shortfalls were in 15-16 and 16-17. Since then, the targets have been pretty close. Carrie mentioned about a $20,000 variance on a $2 million budget, which means our estimates are coming in within about 1%. Really hard to do much better than that. From a fiscal perspective, we might have had hoped that they were plus $20,000 as opposed to minus $20,000. But again, when you have a 1% variance in revenues, it's tracking pretty good. Final point there is that with the 2015 rate increase, the consumer price index adjustments and the pass-throughs that are allowed under Prop 218 are only allowed for 5 years. So for other reasons, especially deferred infrastructure, we know that we have to be addressing the Prop 218 rates again, you know, the latter part of this year. And I'll touch on that in the next agenda item. But that five-year window is coming up again as well. So Arroyo Grande, for example, is currently going through their five-year review for Prop 218. PISMO has recently been doing it. And for both reasons, both for addressing deferred infrastructure as well as the regular five-year cycle, reviewing our rates is, again, part of the 2019 efforts.
Any comments or questions from the board?
I have a comment. Color me happy that we're staying close to our target on our budget.
Yes. Anyone else? Everybody good? Did we have any public comment on this item, on our budget? Okay, seeing none. That will bring us back to 9C. Review and consider presidential messages and community outreach efforts. So
I'm going to do those in reverse order. First, I have, again, a relatively short PowerPoint presentation on public outreach efforts and then the president messages that were attached. And we did get comments from one of the other board members, so we've handed out a red line strikeout. But we're going to do that last. So public outreach in 2019, some of the primary areas or topics that I think we're going to be addressing, and I do think 2019 and working with social media and whatever the outreach efforts are going to be, and they'll vary on a topic-by-topic basis, is we're going to see more public outreach in 2019 than we've probably seen in the 4 or 5 years prior combined. Five Cities Fire Authority is clearly going to be a top priority for the district in terms of working with the community. Second item, stormwater capture and recharge projects, also referred to as our low-impact development projects, which is part of our water resource reliability program. The deferred infrastructure projects themselves, Central Coast Blue will be on the agenda in the future moving forward. Clean and Green, Community Garden, and others are going to require their own special outreach efforts. And then one that I'm putting up there for general discussion, office hours, and then / president and board messages. So taking those one at a time. With respect to Five Cities Fire Authority, I think we're in a really good position because the strategic plan with Five Cities Fire Authority has been adopted. We've been working closely with the cities in order to try to address how the three communities might work, be able to move forward, and that addresses both challenges as well as funding. The county report is an excellent comparison report that in terms of what are the community options with respect to Five Cities Fire Authority versus what are the community options if the district no longer participates in Five Cities Fire Authority. And I want to reflect really quickly here on the county report and a comment that President Austin made with regard to the county's report identifies that if other members withdraw, the district might be in a position of having to consider divestiture. And divestiture is a process where you have to go to the Local Agency Formation Commission and say that this power that we currently have we can't implement or we don't want to implement or give them a reason why the district would no longer want to have that power. But under that option, a plan for services has to be prepared by the district, and it has to be submitted to LAFCO, and LAFCO has to go through their hearing process. LAFCO has to approve it, but the entity that would be then assuming the services, i.e. the County of San Luis Obispo, would also have to approve the plan. So in a divestiture of services option, a community services district cannot impose a requirement on the county. And so while the county's report identifies that and establishes, you know, certain findings about what is that LAFCO process and what might happen and what are the requirements, the county report had no recommendations. So I want to make sure that as we're going through Five Cities Fire Authority and options, nobody in Oceano is misled that, oh, if we're not with Five Cities Fire Authority, then the county is going to have to do all of this stuff for us, because the bottom line is it's not something that the district can impose on the county, and we will then need to talk with the community about, well, what might happen if that path is pursued. And the third option is, well, what happens if the district simply isn't part of Five Cities Fire Authority and there's no arrangement with the county? What would the services that the district could provide based on our existing revenue stream from property taxes? So moving forward, we have to really make sure that we define well what the options for the community are moving forward. The JPA amendments, I spoke to about those in the management report real briefly. But again, those JPA amendments have to be approved this year. If we're going to be able to move forward with Five Cities Fire Authority, I mentioned the county report, a special tax election in order to stay with Five Cities Fire Authority. It's just about as foregone of a conclusion as there can be that the community is going to be addressing a special tax election. What can we say as a district with regard to any tax or any election type of an item, and what can we not say? Because one of the very basic rules is that we're not allowed to expend public funds in support of any type of an election item. And so right now we're going to target February 27th, or if necessary, a special meeting, in order for legal counsel to provide an overview of the laws that the district needs to be aware of and abide by in considering a special tax election. And I think that's really important to do early before we really start getting into significant discussions with the public about the future of Five Cities Fire Authority, so we sort of know that what the lines are in the roads and what we have to stay within. Certainly, while the district is not allowed to expend public funds, your board as a governing board still has the ability to make a position in favor of or opposed to a measure, and that's certainly within the realms of your authority as an elected body. But again, we want, before we get into any significant public outreach on Five Cities Fire Authority, we want to make sure in February to discuss what, you know, what the boundaries are of what we are allowed to do and what we're not allowed to do. I say February 27th or a special meeting because on February 27th, I'm slated to be in Sacramento. I'm on a statewide task force regarding resiliency for small communities, water resource resiliency for small communities, and that's our second task force meeting. So depending on what the agenda is looking like on February 27th, we can have the meeting. We'll make that decision later in February. But I just know that I don't have the ability to set what that task force dates are. So I was told it's February 27th. And again, my basic intent is to make sure that most of the items on the agenda can be covered by our business and accounting manager, and the focus on this one could be covered by legal counsel. But it's also going to depend on if we have other issues that come up that really warrant my attendance, in which case we would look to cancel the February 27th meeting and set up a special meeting at about that same time. So that's Five Cities Fire Authority, and I do think that that's going to be the single most dominant public outreach effort and informational effort that we're going to be looking at in 2019. One of the city managers asked me if we were anticipating doing polling, and my response was, I don't anticipate us doing polling because it's really going to be a community decision on the special tax issue. And to poll them in advance to see whether they like it or not, whether the community likes it or not, what's that really going to tell us when we have to put forth the question or the question needs to be in front of them? But the difference is surveying. Surveys can be very useful in terms of understanding the importance of various issues to the community. Surveys can be really useful in terms of education as well. So sometimes there's a little distinction between polling and surveying, and maybe I just kind of feel like polling has a little bit more of a negative connotation to it versus surveying, where you're really working to try to get feedback from a community. So I do think that doing some surveying amongst the community on community priorities is going to be important in 2019, but I still am not very keen on the concept of polling. Stormwater capture and recharge, and this is our, again, near the school, where we got the Prop 84 grant in order to evaluate where does our urban stormwater flow, and are there possibilities of having projects where we capture that stormwater flow and help it percolate back into the groundwater basin. Benefits include, less flooding and less impact, and then also benefits include these kind of projects can be really important for community beautification. So Cannon Associates has been working on our program and is wrapping up the Prop 84, intending to come and make the presentation on February 13th at your next board meeting. But as I mentioned at the last board meeting, the State Water Board has also provided Proposition 1 technical assistance funding in order to take the conceptual efforts that will be presented on February 13th and move them into a design phase so that they're shovel-ready for grant applications this summer. And that's really good news, because by getting technical assistance from the State Water Board, well, who also evaluates the implementation grants? It's the State Water Board. So we do have a foot in the door, and we can be cautiously optimistic in terms of moving forward. So on the 13th at the next meeting, Melanie Mills with Cannon is intending on presenting the conceptual work that was done in Prop 84, as well as the next steps under the technical assistance program being funded by the State Water Board. A little bit hard to read on the slide, but the district's existing status means that our match of any implementation grants is only 5%. So I threw up a couple of examples. If we had $1 million in grants for implementation, our costs are $50,000. If we had $3 million in grants, our costs would only be $150,000. So you just don't find these types of opportunities where our local matches are that small. Next steps is really to outreach to neighbors and businesses. We already have a meeting scheduled with Lucia Mar Unified School District because one of the concepts is recharge underneath the playgrounds. And Lucia Mar has been doing a lot of work in their on their site at Oceano Elementary School. So we're going to have a meeting set up for February 5th. So Tuesday, February 5th. So in order to initiate discussion with Lucia Mar on that possibility. And what Cannon is going to be doing is identifying before your February 13th meeting all the adjacent property owners regarding the concepts that have been developed, like for 17th Street and 19th Street. Most of the concepts are all kind of near the school, which also has the additional benefit of providing better corridors for kids to get to Oceano Elementary School. So again, Melanie we're intending her coming out on February 13th in order to overview our conceptual report that was funded by Prop 84, to cover next steps under the technical assistance program. And we will also be concurrently starting our outreach with the school district and neighboring property owners. And those two, the fire and the stormwater capture and recharge, are, you know, really kind of front burner issues. Moving to the deferred infrastructure on the water system and upgrade projects, again, a presentation more likely in March and April. We do have preliminary cost estimates from Mike Kielborn at Canon in terms of our deferred infrastructure on our water system. Looks like those numbers are less than $5 million. That's a lot of money, but it is also could be a lot more money. One of the fortunate things, unfortunate, that turned into fortunate, is that the earthquake that happened, San Simeon earthquake, and all the water lines that were broken, you know, we had a few million dollars of replacement projects that were funded through FEMA as a result of that natural disaster. So we are going to have a significant infrastructure program that we're going to have to figure out how to fund and implement, but it certainly could have been worse. The wastewater system project, similar situation. We know we have some deferred maintenance on our wastewater pipelines. We'll be getting the RFP out for an engineers to do evaluation on that shortly. That does not have any grant funding associated with it, but we're going to be targeting a fall completion on that. You know, Tony and Casey know those infrastructure deficiencies pretty well because of our sewer system management plan and the hot spots, which we call them, areas that they have to flush more often because there's constrictions or there's bellies or even some of the lines are in sort of a just bad situation. So the ability to identify those and come up with cost estimates will be relatively quickly. And then the third bullet is really about funding, because when it ultimately comes down to it, we all support the idea of improving our deferred infrastructure, but what are the cost impacts to the community? Point of emphasis is that the grants and low-interest loan options are going to be the number one priority, how to minimize community costs. In the last week or so, I was on the phone with staff of the State Water Board, because the State Revolving Fund Program is a loan program that is especially important to disadvantaged communities. The SRF, as the acronym is known, State Water Revolving Fund Loan Program, has really kind of shrunk in recent years. There's a lot of projects that they will no longer fund. They won't even take applications on. But as far as disadvantaged communities go, it's still their top one of their top priorities. And so we can still anticipate some level of funding support from the State Water Board through the SRF program. The federal side is the USDA Rural Development Program that also provides some good opportunities for disadvantaged communities. And the point there is that we want to make sure in 2019 we're evaluating both of those options to minimize the community costs, but ultimately there is always a community cost, and that again has to dovetail into our Prop 218 efforts later in the year, and the need for a rate consultant to look at that, as well as you know, some of the other details that we already spoke about with respect to sea breeze or accessory dwelling units and those kind of details. So deferred infrastructure, not as heavy of an effort earlier in the year, but a heavier public outreach effort later in the year. Central Coast Blue. So we are going to have a Central Coast Blue team out here pretty soon. We've talked about February dates with the group, and it might end up being March. They're planning on doing updates to all of the agencies, Pismo Beach, Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, and Oceano, and the Sanitation District. I know that there is some that has expressed the belief that this is a Pismo Beach project. It's really part and parcel with the Northern Cities Management Area, the management of the groundwater basin, and so it's not a single agency project. We all have some vested interest in the sustainability of the groundwater basin, And I did want to make sure that I brought, and I'm just going to hand it out, although not really planning on speaking at it in much detail, is the 2017 advocacy platform for Central Coast Blue that was adopted by the board, and some of the direction that had already been provided to the sanitation district representatives, and really should have brought this and had it on the agenda when Jeremy was out here. But the key point that I want to really make is that the other agencies recognize that Oceano's overall water supply portfolio makes it really difficult for your board to consider direct participation in a new water supply project. Defining the need of why Oceano, you know, needs to have a new water supply when we have State Water, we have Lopez Water, and we have a right to pump certain groundwaters. And when we compare that to what the overall demand is in the community, what this advocacy platform essentially says is that, look, your board is supportive of the regional efforts because groundwater sustainability is very important. And so it's slicing this issue where our water supply portfolio doesn't beg for a new supply, and yet we do have an interest in the groundwater basin. We are a participant in the litigation on the groundwater basin. And so how is it that we might support regional efforts? So the third bullet says, well, you know, what are those interagencies' efforts going to look like? There has been a lot of discussion, and there is a possible role of the sanitation district. I understand that they have been most recently working on the revised MOU or MOA with the city of Pismo Beach. I haven't looked at those kind of details. But it gets into when the project is ultimately in front of decision makers, what is the governance structure of Central Coast Blue going to be? How is it going to be implemented? And is there going to be a potential JPA? Because from a fiscal perspective, if there's funding through the sanitation district, then that means that people in Oceano would be paying for some of Central Coast Blue. And the idea of a JPA then is, what are the benefits that are going to come back to the community if the community is paying for it through the sanitation district? And so those discussions have started, you know, amongst the agency staff as we're working on it. Recommendations or thoughts and directions are going to have to all come in front of the various governing boards on how that may or may not work. But again, if it's implemented and individuals in Oceano are paying for some of the costs, then my expectation is that we're going to see some of the benefits. In terms of going back to the need, because the groundwater modeling efforts that have been funded, and a lot of that funding came from the county, thankfully, based on Oceano's input. Because it came through Zone 3 funding in coordinating Lopez and groundwater supplies and our overall water resource picture here, Oceano has customers, again, not through the CSD, but through Zone 3, has helped pay for some of those groundwater modeling efforts. What are we learning about the groundwater modeling efforts, and how do those relate to risks associated with seawater intrusion? And even though we know that we have a 900 acre foot per year allocation out of the groundwater basin, how realistic is that in future? One of the things in the advocacy platform points to that 900 acre feet per year doesn't distinguish between wet cycles and medium cycles and dry cycles, and how might the model tell us what our pumping capabilities are in wet years versus regular years versus dry years. And I don't mean singular year, because you can have a wet year followed by a dry year. You don't measure it on a year-by-year basis, but in cycles. What's happened over the last, have we seen a five-year wet cycle? Have we seen a 10-year wet cycle? Have we seen a five-year or a 10-year dry cycle? So the efforts associated with the groundwater basin modeling have really progressed well, and those are going to be presented, you know, in 2019, and I anticipate sooner in 2019 as opposed to later. Again, public outreach on Central Coast Blue is going to be important, but if others are more of driving Central Coast Blue, then some of the discussion is going to be You know, how much of that's going to come out of the NCMA as a group, how much of the public outreach is going to come out of the sanitation district, and this interagency coordination is always a challenge and can be complex, but you can anticipate that there are going to be updates in February and March on the project status to all of the different governing boards. Clean Green, which is our solid waste and programs, community garden, and others. Real quickly, it's just Clean and Green is staff coordination. We've, you know, working on the offers, getting the new individuals in, talking with Tony about how we're going to do our outreach to businesses and property owners to really help make sure that people understand what we're doing to help clean up the community. And Community Garden, I mentioned Habitat for Humanity only because we've been coordinating with them for the last couple years on their efforts, but obviously, even though they've kind of taken a lead with us in putting forward the Community Garden, by no means is that exclusive to Habitat for Humanity. The more that we get support for the Community Garden, the more likely that it's all going to happen. So Carrie mentioned the next Habitat for Humanity meeting is
February 20th at 6 p.m.
And she's been working to recruit more participants.
Yes.
So everybody who's interested in that, please feel free to contact Carrie so that the district, Oceano, I know that she's reaching out to some individual residents as well to try to get them to participate at the next Habitat meeting.
I just wanted to mention that I was told by the Habitat for Humanity director here that they didn't want anybody except the people who live in the eco district to participate and come to the meetings.
So do you know if that's the recently retired?
It was, I think her name is Julia.
Yeah. So
is she retired? Or is she
take that with a little bit of a grain of salt because their report preparation, they were focused on a certain subset of a certain boundary within the community. But if we're looking at a community garden at 19th and Warner, that property is owned by the district, right? And so I don't think that it's the position. I've never heard of a position coming out of the board of directors of Oceana, whether it's the current board or the prior board, that something is going to be pursued in an exclusive nature. So I can understand where Habitat wanted to focus in on their specific boundary for the development of whatever their plan was, and some of that was just trying to figure out how to get curb, gutter, and sidewalk in some of that area. But it's still 19th and Warner is the district-owned property, and even though Habitat has been out there and reaching out to a lot of people, I can't imagine that your board is going to support exclusivity in terms of who can participate in a community garden.
Yeah, I'd also like to just reiterate my concern about the grant funding, because Habitat said that they'd secured it, but then, in fact, they had not secured it. They also promised to do a community cleanup. People at the meeting that I went to in the summer were like, you know, a lot of people have made promises. We want to see that you'll actually do something. So Habitat promised to do a community cleanup within a month, and I don't think that community cleanup ever took place. So I have a concern just about the organization actually following through with anything regarding the community garden, so I just wanted to offer that caution.
And I will say that some of the early conversations that I had with Habitat had a similar tone, where I was talking about coordination with the district, and there was some feedback that I got that said, well, we don't want to coordinate with governmental agencies. They kind of wanted to do their own thing. I tend to think that that was more of an individual perspective than an organizational perspective. So, again, you know, some of that we're going to have to see. I was very clear in recent correspondence with Habitat that I want to see the community garden done this year.
You know, not only do we have some interested property owners that are adjacent to the property, we know that in the overall efforts of clean and green and a community garden, that what we're doing here at the CSD does very much affect the credibility of the district, and it affects the public perception about other issues that are going on. And I think 2019 needs to be a very important year for stepping forward and addressing some of those, you know, whether it's clean and green, community garden, or the stormwater capture and, you know, recharge projects, which would be, you know, wonderfully beneficial for the community. And so that's where I really appreciate other organizations doing things that are good for the community. But the CSD is the, you know, you're the elected body for the community. The CSD is the governmental entity. And even though we have limited jurisdiction, 2019 is going to be important for us to address these, you know, type of amenities to the community and not just water and sewer services.
And can I add one thing?
Of course.
At the meeting, they took minutes, and so the email she sent me has all the minutes, and a part of the mission statement was making tangible changes you can see. So I'll send you guys the minutes.
Okay, thank you.
And they've had a little change in guard, so we can be optimistic on that front as well.
Oh, okay, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then lastly, so office hours, not that I'm pressing your board on anything specifically, but I do think that there's going to be times in the year where the public outreach on specific issues is going to heighten. And I want to encourage your board that if we can find Saturdays or other times where people can come in and know that board members are going to be available for discussions, it's going to be really beneficial. Because when staff does outreach efforts and we try to get information out there, and we're going to be doing that, that's one thing. But the community elected the five of you to the governing board, and making sure that at the appropriate times the community has easy access to you, whomever they might be, and be able to come in and just know that the door is open is always a good message. So nothing specific on that. Really, but part of the efforts then is we talked about this in late December, and our two outgoing president and the incoming president both drafted messages. Our timing on this is to add some photos. It will be translated into Spanish as well, and to insert it in our next set of bills that go out next week. So this is a good opportunity now for the board as a whole to look at the messages from 2018 president, past president White, and 2019 president Austin. And the handout showed a recommended edit to 2019 president Austin's, because I did not catch the dangling
participle.
Help me up.
Ended part a sentence with a preposition.
Not proposition. What? We ended a sentence with a preposition?
Yeah. Not a proposition. and I'll offer to go to Seabreeze potlucks.
I know. I think that's a really good idea. Okay, so, you know, it's kind of interesting because there's no formal policy of the board on what can be approved, what can't be approved, does this really require approval or not. You know, presidents are generally provided some liberty on governing boards to get messages out, provided they don't conflict with the overall, you know, board's consensus. But I think that making sure to have it on the agenda is appropriate. And I think that the dialogue of other board members being able to put things in future mailers, I think, is appropriate as well. You know, the perspective that the various board members have is good. I just think that it's important that we're sharing with each other what may be said so that everybody has a chance to weigh in.
And if anybody wants to change my message, let me know, because
I thought your message was very well written, Director White.
Thank you.
I liked them both.
I liked hers.
So we want to change this
edit from the red line. That's fine.
Okay. I did have a question on yours, President Austin. In this section on Five Cities Fire Authority, it talks about facing a crossroads. Do we want to hint a little more strongly in there about the upcoming 18 vote?
I didn't quite hear.
Do we want to hint a little more strongly in there about the upcoming 218 vote?
I'd hesitate a little bit right now, only because we need the three governing boards to concur on funding formulas. We have this April 1st deadline coming up. Mm-hmm. And if all the three agencies don't concur on it, then we're going to be on a different path altogether. And that path is going to be looking internally on what we can do and whether we can develop something with the county. So I think we have to wait a little bit on that to make sure that we have confidence that all three agencies are on the same page. And that's why then the idea is that the February 27th board meeting, we start talking first about what's the boundaries of what we can and we can't say, so that we're all sort of got the primer or the background on the rules that we have to follow, so that then if by April 1st all the three agencies are ready to move forward, then we're set to start doing public outreach and everything.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay. I noticed you got some extra space here too, so.
So we're going to fill in with pictures. We'll probably drop that to 11 point. It's 12 point right now, depending on how we want to fit
Vice
in.
Vice President White didn't have any space left on the page at all.
That's because she used to be a reporter.
I was just wondering that the second to last paragraph, if maybe we could say a little bit about our plan to reconstitute the parks mission by using our time at the community center. Let people know that that's coming, and maybe mention some of the other technology that we're planning to take advantage of in terms of making our videos more accessible.
Social media part?
And facilitating participation by Spanish speakers and people who are hard of hearing. And those are good things that we're planning to do in the upcoming year, so I think it would be nice if we could mention them.
Okay, so Parks and Rec, or I should say Recreation.
Yeah, Recreation is better.
With school. Oh, there you're. That's why you saw that blank space. You recognized that there's some opportunity there. And that's a little bit of the, maybe adding on a little bit to the social media, right? We might even...
Well, yeah, social media, like what...
We might break that sentence into two or something like
just
that.
Just add mm-hmm. that in, like we're talking about...
And then was there a third?
Hearing impaired and Spanish speaking. Yeah.
Social media.
Right, you can add it in right where it says promote transparency in government by or...
I'm not sure if I've captured what your thoughts are. I see, mentioning the recreation programs with Lucy Amar, utilizing new technologies to enhance, participation and outreach mm-hmm. with the community, addressing... I'm not sure exactly how to say addressing, technologies in terms of hearing impaired. We're kind of doing that.
Just providing greater accommodations for people of limited hearing and Spanish speakers.
Okay. Got those?
And then Parks and Recreation.
Got that?
Did you add that in?
Yep.
That's fine with me, yeah.
Yeah, so we can certainly take those comments and work some language into there.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? Okay, do we have any?
Can I go
Back to office hours. I wanted to say something. Sometimes it's hard to get a word in.
Sorry.
I had this idea of actually, like, going to the people with, like, you know, maybe a cardboard table and it, some chairs and milk and cookies, and like going to Central Market and sit out there and talk to people and maybe have some flyers pertaining to whatever, you know, position we're working on, or, you know, even the post office, you know, wherever the people really are, instead of trying to have people come to our office.
It's kind of like sidewalk forums. I've seen those in, I've seen those done really successfully at farmers markets.
Yeah.
We don't really have a farmers market here, but
we've got Central Market, though. Everyone goes there.
Yeah. And I know that Grover, in doing some of their public outreach, did the sort of sidewalk forums as well.
And, you know, if you have bribery material, cookies, 7-Up, I mean, really, a lot of people.
I'm sorry, did you say bribery material?
Yeah. A lot of people will listen to anything if you give them a cookie, right?
We, that's a great idea.
As a community, willing to volunteer for that.
Okay.
That's right. I'm hearing a lot of
even,
collaboration.
Even maybe go to some of the mobile home parks and sit in the park area, and we can sit and talk to people there. I think there's different opportunities.
I think that's
there
great.
There will also be an opportunity on April 7th because Oceano Day of the Child is coming back at the community center.
Oh. What is that?
April 2nd.
April
7th. April 7th. It's a Sunday. It's 1 to 3:30. This will be our third year participating in it. Carrie and I have done booths out there where we've handed out different information. It's heavily participated by local families, predominantly Spanish families. It's run by CAPSLO, County Office of Education. They do fun things. Boys and Girls Club comes out there. Sheriff's Department, Five Cities Fire. It's probably about 50 different agencies and vendors. And so we would like to, I think, incorporate board participation this year as a great way to reach out to the community.
I'm just raising my hand.
I'll have more information soon. We've submitted our vendor application. It's free. It's a free event.
Where is it?
At the community center.
When do we have to get our application in?
I've already submitted it.
For here, but for other people.
Oh, I will.
Like if you want. Well, like, cause remember we did the Kiwanis, did our popcorn.
Yes. I'll find the deadline for you.
What was the date again?
Sunday, April 7th. Yeah. It's a great event. It's lots of fun.
Yeah, it is.
You know, it almost strikes me that we should simply have public outreach as the last item on the agendas so that we're consistently talking about these different concepts. Because it's really that multifaceted approach. Sometimes we do the more formal town hall meetings, especially if there's a big decision that's coming up for your board. The office hours, that Central Market concept, Day of the Child. There's a lot of different avenues, and the importance of addressing them is that those different avenues appeal to different people. Some people are going to show up at the Day of the Child. Other people will come to town hall meetings. You'll capture some at the Central Market. But for your board members to, you know, really be out there with the public and stuff is, it's going to be more important in 2019 than any of the recent years, for sure.
Kiwanis pancake breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I had been planning to start an office hour at Quintessa Coffee. It opens up, which should be any time now.
Yeah, and we can post those on the website to, you know, help with making sure everybody understands or knows.
Okay. Public comment on the last item? Do we have any public comment on the presidential messages and the community outreach efforts? Anyone? Okay, then we will go on to hearing items. None. received written communications. Anything on that? Okay. Late received written communications. Nothing. Anybody have anything on future agenda items?
Yes, I do. I would like to request we have a reconsideration of the committee assignments at the next meeting.
You.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Matter of fact, do we need to make a motion on that or anything?
I think a motion would probably be appropriate just because, you know, under the bylaws and our regular procedures, we've done our committee assignments. So it's one of those items that if your board wants to reconsider, I think that formality of a motion would probably be appropriate.
I so move.
I second.
Okay, well then we'll do a vote.
Or
you don't need a roll call.
No.
No, but whether there's more discussion or whatever
any
would be
more it. Discussion? You have any?
No.
Consider the agenda assignments.
Yeah.
Okay. Then. All right, all in favor of
considering that there's a motion, I would recommend taking public comment.
Any public comment on this motion to reconsider committee assignments? Seeing none. Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Okay, four. Did you? I didn't hear. Did you? You didn't vote?
No, I did. That's a fine.
You said yes? Okay. I didn't hear. So 4-1. To add that to the agenda.
The next meeting.
The next meeting.
Okay.
And is that it for everything tonight?
I just wanted to mention that I'm going to be in Costa Rica on March 5th through the 12th. So I think you had talked about possibly having a special meeting around that time. It would not be available.
Okay, so the special meeting I was figuring would be really close to February 27th because it's just February 27th that I'm up in Sacramento. But 3-5 to 3-12 means that... Oh, you'll be...
So I'll be missing a couple of committee meetings.
But March is 3-13?
Yes.
So you'll actually...
I won't miss a board meeting, a scheduled board meeting, but I will miss a couple of committee meetings, so my alternate would need to attend those.
Okay.
Yeah, I got a RAC anyway, so I can go to the other.
Go to the RWMG. Okay.
And I can catch anything that anybody needs if there's a problem.
And as a reminder, so February 7th, F5 Cities Fire Authority is going to be when the city managers and I and Chief Lieberman are going to be presenting ultimately what I think our recommendations are going to be to the various governing boards. I encourage board members who can attend to be there.
So you think we should be?
I think it would be really good. I don't know how many of the elected officials from the other agencies might show up. I know that we're going to be planning on doing some sort of a joint presentation.
Okay.
I know that one of the concerns from other agencies was that we didn't hold a special tax election last November. So I will be providing probably a little bit more detail on the perspective of Oceano moving forward and, you know, my perspective and everything. But again, if board members can attend it, I think it's going to be, you know, the first good unveiling of where we think we might be going.
And that meeting is at 10 a.m. at the Roy Grandy City Council meeting.
Okay.
Not Grover Beach.
Roy Grandy City Council.
Roy Grandy. We normally meet in Grover, but they're not available.
Okay, well, if that's it.
I make a motion, we adjourn.
Second. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you, folks, for coming tonight.
What
Thank
kind
you.
Of cookies does Seabreeze like?
Well, we're baked cookies enough. So